News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 2nd of April, Anno Domini 2006, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
Dave just did this dive for his
really,
microphone.
That was really, cool. Can you do that again?
Like, he suddenly remembered that he had to speak into the microphone, which was way across the room.
I knew I was missing something.
That microphone swirled around in circles, headed right over for him.
Yeah, you're seriously missing something, but I'm not entirely certain what that is. It's 6 minutes after the hour, and we're going to be bringing you all kinds of interesting
stuff.
Yeah,
six after 11 o'clock, folks.
That's right. That's right. Here on the East Coast, it's...
Well,
it's,
for the folks that
daylight
didn't
savings time,
spring forward.
That's right. There are a bunch of people right now sitting down and thinking, not 1 hour to Soundbites. Just another hour till Soundbites. They're wrong.
They missed it.
We're here.
Remember,
we're
next,
here.
And next year it changes.
Right. Next year it starts earlier, ends
two
later.
2 weeks earlier.
Ends a week later.
2 weeks later.
Yeah, maybe.
Two
Something
and two.
Like that.
Adds a month.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It adds a month.
I thought they were going to do it just 1 and 3. That way you'd... Thanksgiving, it would be around Thanksgiving, because right now it's the last weekend in October that we fall back.
Right.
So it should get it around Thanksgiving. That would make more sense.
Yeah,
it
the 29th. Sense. Yeah, next year it's March 11th and November 4th.
There you go.
Why we even do it to begin with?
Well, and that's, doesn't matter.
Yeah, it was originally for the farmers.
Right.
And then they merged that into the energy crisis. So if it's lighter, longer, you don't have to burn your electric lights.
And right. Yeah, we skipped it for, what was it, 1 year. And everything worked fine. Why did we go back to it? Yeah.
There was a big sort of uproar last year when they announced, or 2 years ago when they announced that the change in daylight savings time. And what about all our VCRs that are pre-programmed to know when daylight savings time is?
That's what
the clocks
gonna
are going to flash wrong.
Yeah, right. They're going to flash 12 an hour early.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. It is going to mess up so many things. I mean, just alone in your computer. When you turn your computer on today, it's going to sit there and say, all right, we've jumped ahead. If you had the, which by default around here it does, the automatic adjustment for daylight savings time. And it warns you on your screen. Right. It will be there this morning.
Right. There's going to have to be patches. Not a big deal.
Or you just change it manually.
Or you just change it manually. Now there's a concept that I don't know that I'm ready for.
Yeah.
You know what a pain it is going through a hot... Well, you can,
and there's
you
always that one clock you miss.
Right. I actually have a lot fewer than I used to have.
I got quite a few. I got my lighting system outside that I got to change. And then the wife has to sit there, and this drives me nuts.
Yeah.
Getting the microwave.
Yep.
The clock on the stove.
Right.
And then another clock all in sync.
Well, I submit to you that
they all
got to
be within a second.
I submit to you that you don't necessarily need three clocks in the same room.
Everything comes with a clock these days.
Everything comes with a clock.
Well, the microwave and the stove, they just come
now
with
most of the computers
better
now are
flash yellow or 12 o'clock.
Yeah, the computers now are internet enabled, so they can synchronize with an internet time server.
Right. That's what this one did.
Clock radios are doing that now, and televisions can synchronize and VCR synchronize over their network. So it's
cell phones.
Hopefully we may not. Yeah, the cell phones. We may not have to worry about it.
What I really want, and I want this. They now have big digital clocks you can hang on the wall that are PoE, power over Ethernet.
Mm-hmm.
There's no wall plug. You plug them in and they get the power over the Ethernet, and they get their time sync over the Ethernet. So until the thing actually physically dies, it's always right.
Yeah, the problem is it's the $1,500 box at the other end that puts power on the Ethernet.
Well, that's the hard part. Yeah. I'm hoping RIT will pay for that part at work, and then I won't have it at home, and then we're done. Yeah, that's how that works. Listen, before we get to the phones, I want to talk about a new Internet Explorer. For those six of you who are still you, how many years have we been telling you stop using Internet Explorer? All right. Last week, there were a whole bunch of exploits out for Internet Explorer, zero-day exploits. They announced that there were actual problems. And then, guess what? Immediately, they actually showed up on the net as problems. Monday, Tuesday, last week, it was just horrifyingly bad. By Thursday or Friday, it had calmed down. Well, guess what? It started all over again. Friday, a brand new exploit. Faster, way more vicious. Hackers have posted a new version that makes it easier to exploit an unpatched vulnerability in Internet Explorer. The bug was disclosed way back on March 22nd, but of course, Microsoft won't update it until the second Tuesday in April, so you've got a ways to go, and that's not even this week, it's next week. It exploits, here's a surprise, a flaw in Internet Explorer in the way it processes web pages. Basically, all you have to do is go to the web page and you're owned. You don't even have to click on anything. You don't have to do anything. You just have to go to the page. And I don't know why you would even bother. All you need to do is first, of course, update your antivirus. That's very important. But just stop using Internet Explorer. Go download Firefox and your problems are over.
And we should mention again to people, if you click a big blue E to get on the Internet, you are using Internet Explorer.
Yeah, exactly. The software uses new techniques. They even avoid certain antivirus software. It's a whole lot more effective. You're a lot more vulnerable than you used to be. The fix is not expected before April 11th. Microsoft will not be hurried and put out extra stuff. There are some unsupported patches from EI Digital Security and Determina Inc. Microsoft doesn't recommend that users install these patches. You should just go commando. You can actually disable Internet Explorer's active scripting feature as a workaround. But this is a very severe one, and you should definitely make sure that you stop running Internet Explorer. There, I think I've said that enough. Okay, now,
This also affects the betas of IE7 that's supposed to be much more secure, right?
Right, right. It's the same code. I don't know what's more secure about it, because it affects those as well. So folks, really, get over it.
So many folks are confused, though. They just are assuming that that's what they have to use. They were told by Roadrunner or whatever, or DSL, or
that's what came on their computer.
They got to use that because that's what they were set up with.
Right.
I mean, folks don't think to ask, well, can I use something else?
They don't know there is anything else.
Exactly.
So that's our job to inform.
That's what we do.
And let me inform you to stop running Internet Explorer. We're not just doing this on a lark or anything else. It's safe to do, and trust us.
Right. Trust us. That'll get you in more trouble than any other two things I can think of. All right, let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Bill from Honeyoy. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Who walked in?
All right.
Oh, Rob. You must be talking about Rob.
Hey, look, I got a mailer a couple of days ago in the mail from, apparently, the Supreme Court of the state of New York.
Yeah.
With a $350 million potential class action settlement from Microsoft. For anybody who bought Windows, DOS, Office, Word, Excel between 94 through 2004.
Right. This is the aftermath of the settlement that Microsoft acknowledged they are an illegal monopoly.
Okay. So this is a legit thing.
Yeah, absolutely legit.
So you can get your $1.25 or whatever actually, divides out by with the number of population. What was that Steve Martin movie, The Jerk?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, a $10 million lawsuit was won by 11 million people, so everyone gets 96 cents.
Right, right. Right, you're not going to get a lot of money. And then, of course, I have a friend who's a conspiracy theorist, and he took off his tinfoil hat just long enough to say that Microsoft is collecting the names of people that they can then audit to make sure that they have that they completely comply with Microsoft.
Well, and the annoying thing about the settlement is you don't get money, you get coupons to buy Microsoft software.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So the penalty for being an illegal monopoly is to sell more of your software?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So to be honest with you, if you really want more Microsoft software and some of it is coupons for stuff that the average home user will never use, then send it in. Otherwise, just toss it. It's not that big a deal.
Well, supposedly you can transfer these vouchers, too.
Can you? Yeah. I never even looked into that.
Yeah, it says here that...
Do you hate somebody else that bad that you want to pass it on?
Well, somebody wants to buy a new version of Office or something like that.
Do you really hate somebody that bad? They can get Open Office for free.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, just calling. You get so much junk.
Yeah, we hear you. Thanks.
Yeah, no, it's a legit thing, but to me it's big deal.
Yeah, MicrosoftNYSettlement.com has the legitimate and accurate information for anyone who bought Microsoft software between May 18th, 1994 and December 31st, 2004.
And Steve will have that
up on the page shortly.
Mm-hmm. Our next caller is Keith on a cell phone. Keith, you're pulled over to the side of the road, right?
Yeah, put the cigarette down in the coffee, and I'm not putting my makeup on either.
There you go. Thank you.
Hey, seriously, though, I'm sitting in a parking lot. I found, try not to laugh, but I found a laptop in a dumpster that somebody had discarded.
Cool.
I couldn't not look at it to find out why, because even on eBay, it might fetch $20-$30.
So sure.
I took it out, took it home, I opened it up, it's a Dell CGI, I believe it is, or it's an older Dell. I powered it up. The battery still has some power in it. And basically, it's got a Windows 98 NT, or NT Windows 98 on it, and it's 128 megabytes of RAM. What I'm trying to, and it came up with, you have to get the system working, you have to install the password,
which I
don't have because obviously the previous owner just wanted to get rid of it for some reason.
Right.
So what I'm trying to do is to separate. Can you take off the network and just run Windows 98?
Well, if you're
it depends on whether it's a BIOS boot password or it's a Windows password.
Yeah, and if you're running,
well, if you got as far as to know how much memory and what it's running, it must be the Windows password.
But the thing of it is, though, if it's 98, you don't need a password. You can say cancel and blow right by it.
All right, I have an old Windows 98. CD. If I put that in the disk drive and start it up, will it install the Windows 98, or will I have to go to setup and tell it to read the CD first?
You got to tell it to read the CD.
All right.
But you don't need to do that. You can just blow by that password and then go into the control panel under networking and change the networking to Windows User. Instead of Windows networking, you change it to Windows User.
Yeah, but he wants to get the BIOS password out.
Well, what I'm trying to...
He doesn't have one.
My long-term goal is to get it so it works. It would be a setup computer for some girl I know, young girl.
Yeah, so what you're saying is
have a computer.
The password is when you go into the BIOS and try to change something?
No, when it all powers up and it tells you what it is, it runs a little configure system where it's telling you what it's got. And then it basically has the login window that you normally see.
Yeah.
Right, just hit cancel.
Windows long.
Yeah, if it's Windows 98, just hit cancel. You're good.
Oh, because it has the guy's name. It has the user ID.
Just hit cancel, Keith.
Just hit cancel. Then go into the control panel under networking. Change it from Windows networking to Windows user.
Yeah, what you have to remember is that Windows 98 was not in any way, shape, or form secure. When it came up and asked you for username and password, if you hit cancel, it bypassed it and let you in anyway.
Or you could type in that girl's name and make up a password or leave it blank. It doesn't care. It'll accept that and remember that from then on.
So there's two lessons here for people. One is it's illegal to throw computers in the garbage because of the toxic materials that make up computers.
Right.
And two, erase your stuff.
Yeah, no kidding.
So
who knows what he's going to find when he hits cancel? He could find financial records. He could find all kinds of important stuff.
Documents, everything.
So, yeah, I mean, you got to be very careful of that and make sure that. And that's for everybody. When you actually get a laptop and you're going to throw it away, make sure you absolutely wipe it out.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, and Mina Francesco on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Now, we just told you about moving from Internet Explorer to Firefox and stop using IE. Now, we're going to talk about the next version of IE. Internet Explorer is coming out with version 7. It's a huge, big deal. Unfortunately, Internet Explorer is both the old and the new versions. Microsoft is changing the way that Internet Explorer renders multimedia content on web pages. What happened was there was a company named Aeolus Technologies who sued Microsoft because they have a patent that Microsoft's Internet Explorer violated about the way that the browser handles ActiveX controls. Aeolus Technologies won, and they had to pay millions and millions of dollars and change the way Internet Explorer works. This is going to be amazingly disruptive. The idea is that the way websites now work, you can embed certain objects, multimedia ActiveX control type objects, directly. So that, like, for example, you go to a web page and it starts playing music or starts playing a movie or that sort of fare. Well, they won't be able to do that anymore. You'll have to click something to get it to work. Any website that currently does that simply won't work with Internet Explorer anymore after this. They're going to have to change. The web developers are going to have to change the way it works because there's got to be a click somewhere in order to make it work.
Do you remember the click?
Yeah, exactly. This is good news for people like me who hates being assaulted when they go to a website by music suddenly starting to play.
Yeah.
Or some sort of video suddenly starting to play. Now, that doesn't apply to Flash. Flash will still start to play. Remember Francesco's Law? The amount of Flash on the website is inversely proportional to the amount of content on the actual site itself. But there is going to be a patch update on top of the April patch that disables ActiveX controls. Disables the changes through June of 2006, so that the actual update will happen in June 2006. So if you're a web developer, you need to start checking that out because things are going to change. If you've embedded applets or embed or object elements, things are going to change. So be very careful of that. And for all of us, who are using Firefox, there will be no change to our web browsing experience. To those of you using Internet Explorer, there will be some fairly large changes. All right, our next caller is Lynn from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Lynn. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I presently am using Firefox and Thunderbird.
Yay!
And I dance a security tango. I do all those good things.
Yay!
I have Trend Micro as my firewall, as my whole security system.
Right.
And I am going out to my son's, and I purchased him Trend, and I'm going to put it on his computer. I did put it on his computer last week, and he called me last night and said that he could not get Outlook and Internet Explorer. Well, my intention was that I was going out there today and get him out of both of those sequences and put him on Firefox and Thunderbird.
There you go.
But I have a feeling. But he talked to Roadrunner this morning, and they told him to exit out of Trend, and he was able to open up the other two. Now, that same thing, in essence, happened to me a while ago, and I disabled my personal firewall in Trend, and I could get my email out. So I am wondering if I have to do the same thing when I get out to his place today.
Not specifically, but the concept of a firewall is to prevent your computer from accessing the internet badly, for bad reasons.
Or anybody coming in.
And apparently Trend Micro intelligently thinks that Internet Explorer and Outlook Express are viruses.
So when you have a program...
That's a feature, Lynn.
When you have a program that you want to get to the internet, like your web browser and your email program, you have to tell your firewall to allow those programs through the firewall.
Right.
And it's a very common problem we've seen people running into is their firewall is set too high, so their internet browser can't get
blocks
through it.
Blocks it totally.
So if you turn off the firewall, it works, but that's bad because then anything can get in. You need to go into your firewall settings and allow your browser and your email program through the firewall.
Right. That's one of the nice things about
Zone Alarm,
which is that the first time it encounters something, it asks you, do you want to let this out? Yes or no, remember this or don't remember this.
Yeah.
And so it sort of does it quasi-automatically for you. But with Trend Micro, you have to actually go in and set it, which some people will argue is good because it gives you a choice. All right, Lynn, we have to take a break. I have to tell you, it's incredibly refreshing to see a parent who's actually fixing their kid's computer and doing that. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco. We're going to be back with, I don't know who, we've got some people on the phone. We've got a lot more news and views and all of the good stuff like that. We're going to talk about our website. We're going to talk about new hard drives and, eBay. Phishing on eBay. Very, very bad. Very, you got to be very careful of that. A lot of stuff like that going on. I want to apologize for my little rant earlier. I know that some of you are stuck using Internet Explorer. And we'll talk about how you feel about Microsoft. There's a brand new study out about the trustworthiness of various computer folks. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave and Steve and Rob and Nick on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
We're not sure what Sean Hannity knows about computers. But then again, we're not sure what the Soundbites boys know about anything but computers. Catch Sean Hannity later today on Wham! Now, back to Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 31 minutes after the hour, you're back with Soundbites.
You've never done a time check before.
I did it before. I'm doing it now. We'll see if I remember to do it. It's not like I'm a professional broadcaster, but I play one on TV. All right. Next thing we're going to talk about today, there's an interesting new thing coming out. Faster and denser hard drives. Perpendicular recording technology packs more data. And by the way, it's a whole lot faster. Normally, when you put data on a hard drive, basically there's a, there's a layer of rust on the hard drive.
Little bits of rust that used to go side to side, not go up and down.
Right, right. They used to go side to side, and of course you can only pack so many of them in the space. Now they orient them up and down so you can pack a whole lot more in.
Are they using glue to hold it on so it doesn't fall off?
They're actually, it's rust, and they use kind of a little layer of glue to stick it to the plastic underneath. It's a fascinating technology to think that our entire computer industry runs on rust. That's how it works.
Yeah.
All right, but at any rate, Seagate has a new drive out, the Momentus 5400.3 and the 5400.2. PMR, perpendicular magnetic recording, packs a whole lot more data into a whole lot less space. They not only boost storage capacity, but they perform faster as well. They're about 7% faster in terms of that, which if it's sustained throughput, you're loading something real big, you get about 15 to 17% more. You get a whole lot more data on the drive. It's pretty nifty. Toshiba has already shipped 40 and 80 gigabyte 1.8-inch PMR drives. Toshiba's Megabeat MP3 players. You've never heard of the Megabeat MP3 player, have you? It's sold only in Japan, and it has the 40 and 80 gig drives in it.
That's probably why we didn't hear about it.
Right? Seagate's 2.5-inch Momentus from 30 gig to 160 gig. It's the biggest notebook drive available. It uses less energy, gives off less heat. It's a cooler, quieter machine.
As far as hard drives for the laptops, Fujitsu just announced that they're coming out later this summer.
Right.
With a 200 gig right. laptop hard drive.
Right. But right now, the biggest one you can buy
It'll be 7,200 RPM, which, you know, for the laptop folks has been a big issue. Yeah.
Right. Apple uses the 1.8 inch drives in their full sized iPods, which are currently 30 and 60 gigs. So expect to see 40 and 80 gigs soon, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it looks like the PMR technology is going to deliver at least a fourfold increase in capacity. That means you're going to have 2 terabyte, 3.5-inch single platter hard drives for desktops.
Right.
Isn't
now,
that amazing?
Right.
One
now.
Terabyte disks for laptops. 50 gigabytes for MP3 players.
Right now, the largest single drive you can buy is only 0.5 terabyte.
I know it.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, 0.5 terabyte.
I can remember, because we were talking at the Soho show, around with folks. I can remember carrying around the old Trash 80 8-inch floppies.
And that was like that was like 100K, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
And
I
just
still
carrying
have one of those.
Around that much information. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And then you get a 5 meg hard drive.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I remember getting the 5 meg Apple
profile. Yep, $5,000 It used to be $1,000 a meg.
Right now, it's $2 a gig.
$1,000 for a terabyte.
Right.
Yep.
Right. It's about $2 a gig to buy a hard drive, and it looks like that price is going to stay the same even with these new vertical or perpendicular magnetic.
Yeah, capacities are going up. Prices are staying the same.
That's fine. Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Yep.
That's fine with me. Our next caller, Colleen from Perry, New York. Welcome. Is it Colleen or Colleen?
It's Colleen.
Okay.
Hi. I have a laptop computer, and yesterday when I tried to turn it on, nothing happened. The machine was running. The screen was completely black. It didn't boot or anything, and I couldn't shut it off. I thought I had some really bad problem, but since it was a laptop, I just unplugged it and let the battery run out, and I plugged it back in this morning and started it up, and it booted normally.
April Fool's, aren't you?
Pardon me?
Your machine was playing an April Fool's joke?
That's what I'm wondering. Is this an April Fool's virus?
Well, there is one.
Yeah.
That's not what it does.
Yeah, only one?
Yeah, we're all right. There's
probably thousands.
Thousands. Have you danced to the Security Tango lately?
Well, not in the last week. And I did a lot of surfing on Friday night.
See? Of course, you're not using Internet Explorer, right?
Correct. I use Mozilla.
Right. And you're not using Outlook Express?
Correct.
Okay. So you're semi-safe. It certainly wouldn't hurt to dance the tango. And for those of you who've been living under a rock for the last couple of years, that's at securitytango.com. Click on the Let's Dance button, print out the instructions, follow them step by step, including the last one, you send an email to Lori Lynch, and she'll send you including directions to keep it running nice. Colleen, you need to dance the Security Tango, but it's certainly possible that it's a little glitchy. How old is this laptop?
It's less than 2 years old. I bought it in August, about 2 years ago.
And do you carry it around a lot?
No.
Has it been hard used?
No, it's pretty much. I leave it on my desktop. I'm pretty much using it.
We've seen a lot of laptops have trouble waking up. Mm-hmm. If you'd been using it and it went to sleep, in the energy saver controls, there's usually two or three different settings. There's screen, computer, and hard drive.
Well, you can do what I like
and
doing
in BIOS or in Windows.
In the Windows section, there, you know, when we can change it from whether it's plugged in or whether it's running off battery.
Right.
If it's plugged in battery, I turn everything off.
If it's plugged in, not battery.
Correct.
Right.
And
don't
if it's running on battery,
run.
Then use the energy settings.
Right.
Because the energy settings, when you're running on battery, let the battery last longer.
Right.
But if you're running on AC, it almost doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
And when the hard drive goes to sleep and the computer's still running and you try to wake it up again, there's sometimes problems with the hard drive waking up.
Especially some brands.
And then it apparently couldn't wake up your screen because the screen was still black.
Right.
You should have been able to do a hard power down. Usually press and hold the power button for 10 seconds should have turned the computer off completely.
Okay.
Without letting
that.
The battery drain all the way.
Right.
And of course, you pull the battery out and then it'll die.
Right. And the other thing that Dave alluded to, which we need to mention a little more explicitly, is that you can do power settings in both the BIOS and in Windows. Pick one.
Yeah.
Turn off. We generally tell people let Windows do it and turn it off in the other. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
It's Soundbites, America's longest-running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Hi there. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Those of you who are eBay customers, or eBay users, I guess is the best way to put that, you need to be warned, clicking on an eBay auction listing could get you an unwanted result, a fake eBay login page created by scammers who are looking to steal your username and your password. eBay has about 181 million users worldwide, making it most likely the world's most popular online marketplace. It has its own online payment unit, PayPal, which I use at AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com. And we'll talk more about that later. Typically, spam emailers people to fake eBay-looking websites. But on eBay, they're also taking advantages of the actual auction listings that are on the site itself. Basically, what happens is customers can customize their auction pages using certain web programming techniques and automated tools. The problem is the attackers are building auction pages that include rigged listings. You click on the link and it sends you to a phishing site. eBay's aware of that abuse goes on. They're constantly checking their pages, but you got to be careful that when you go to what looks like an eBay login page, make sure that it really is at eBay. That's, you know, people will steal your information and use it in very bad ways. If you're an eBay user, be very careful that when you click on a link, it's really taking you to eBay. It's just a matter of watching that address window and seeing that it says eBay.com and not anything else.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
A lot of the banks in that are doing, what was it? Chase.
Mm-hmm.
I wound up getting a couple from Chase warning me about my information and everything else, and it looked as official as all get out.
Yep.
There's only one problem. Never have, nor never will I ever have an account at Chase.
Right.
So my account can't be, corrupted or anything else. I don't have one.
Yeah, right. So yeah, you got to be careful of that stuff. Check with the company before you do any of that stuff. Our next caller is Bob from Greece, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Good morning. Thank you. Well, are you there?
Yeah, we are there. Are you there?
Are you there?
There was a big buzz on the telephone.
Oh, well, there you are.
I was painting out in the garage listening to your rant on IE. And I'm a longtime Firefox user.
Okay.
This week I went back to IE.
Oh, really?
Not permanently, I hope, but I could not use my Firefox because of invasion by another search service called About. When you fired up Firefox, it looked normal, and the homepage came on, Washington Times, New York Times, whichever, and as soon as you did anything to it, you got a page that said About, and it was a search service, and you could click on various things, which I didn't do until later experimenting. Anything you did with normal Firefox, whether it be the Google toolbar or the URL bar, anything at all that you did, got rid of the About and left you with a GIF image of Firefox, which didn't work at all, of course.
Right.
A GIF image, which you could then leave and come back in and do it. We ran the Tango three times on Thursday, and finally we did, well, not finally, each time we could find indeed at the very end of, which one comes last, Spybot, we found something called the Avenue A.
Mm-hmm.
And Avenue A, we looked up, I guess a lot of people have trouble with that, with Firefox, but...
Well, with everything, yeah.
With everything, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, when you ran...
One sec. The Avenue A could be gotten rid of by Spybot, but it would come back within 10 minutes.
Right,
but
that's my...
It didn't always do this business with the About, and I'm not sure they're connected at all.
Well, Avenue A has several different things that it does. So here's the thing. When you ran the security Tango, did you do the whole thing, run it in safe mode, all that other stuff?
Absolutely.
And it still came back.
He's got some other spyware that... Did you also run the CW Shredder?
Yes, sir.
And did they find anything?
No, sir. The only thing that found anything was Spybot finding Avenue A.
See, he might have to take it to a professional and have it run...
on another computer.
Hijack this,
yeah. Because we don't recommend... It's not on our list, but it's a utility that if you know what the heck you're doing...
Yeah, the problem with Hijack This is that you really need to know what you're talking about in order to interpret its listings when it brings stuff back.
Oh, yeah.
But one of the things that you can do is bring it to a professional like Dave or Steve or whoever and have them clean it out. What they'll do is put it in another machine as a second drive and clean it out completely that way. That way there's nothing lurking in the background, nothing hiding in memory, nothing hiding anywhere, because this will take every piece of it straight through.
And about.com is a legitimate website, search engine information source. And one of the things they do that I never really liked is when you find something on about.com and then go to it, it leaves itself in memory in a little Java applet.
Yep.
And then puts the solution you're looking for at the bottom of the window. So that about.com stays up there all the time.
Yep.
And that could be what he's stuck on. It's staying there when he tries to go back into Firefox.
Oh, that's possible. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes. Have a honey game with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Mumblemouth Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wham's online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites at 51 minutes after the hour or 9 minutes before the hour.
Wow.
I'm trying. I'm working at it.
Woo-hoo. Professional. Don't try this at home.
Yeah, I'm having trouble trying it in the studio.
Oh, you're doing good at it. You've been consistent so far.
Right. Now, after the next hour, we'll talk. We'll let Steve talk about Apple's 30th anniversary and the huge number of surprises that were announced by Apple at that time.
There were.
But before that, we should mention that we've talked about this before. MP3 players have the potential to cause hearing damage.
What?
I can't hear you. I got an iPod in my ear. Basically, what happens is that because the buds go inside your ear and kids turn them up so loud, they're getting a lot of hearing damage. It's apparently better if you're using an external, regular padded headphone type thing. But it's a combination not only of the volume, but also of the fact that it's right inside your ear. At any rate, Apple has released iPod software update 1.1.1, point left elbow, point J, point banana, which adds a feature that lets you set the iPod's maximum volume. Perhaps more importantly, parents can set their children's iPod volume to a maximum level and lock it with a password. There's a bunch of tricky issues that the company got around, differences in recording volume and headphones and blah, 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 blah. So it's pretty neat. Apple put up a little treatise on sound and hearing at apple.com/sound volume. Steve will have that up or already does. Detailing how the ear works, how you can potentially harm them with loud sounds. I have a couple of problems with this. The big one I have is that why does Apple think that parents can set their children's iPods? Generally, it's the kids who are smarter than the parents when it comes to this stuff. But
the parent usually turns to the kids and says, here, will you get this working for me?
Yeah, exactly. Well, of course, and now, like Lynn, there are parents who actually deal with their kids' computers as opposed to the other way around. But if you're a parent who's worried about the sound level at which your kids, I have heard kids walking around. I work at RIT in the College of Business. And I hear kids walking around. The music is so loud in their little iPod earbuds that I can hear it as clear as day.
Get out.
And I think to myself, this kid's deaf in 5 years.
If that long.
It's ridiculous. But now you have the ability, at least, assuming you know what you're doing with your kid's iPod, to handle that.
Well, and this is kind of ironic and annoying in at the same time. And how is that even possible? that's annoying. Last year, a group of lawyers filed a class action lawsuit against Apple, claiming that the iPod is too loud. And it's Apple's fault that I'm going deaf because I play my iPod too loud.
Right. Because we have completely abrogated personal responsibility in America.
Well, then so I can sue my manufacturer of the radio in my vehicle that if I turn it up too loud.
Yep, they allow you to turn the radio too loud, so it's their fault you've suffered hearing damage.
Okay. Right.
So this group of lawyers is claiming a huge success because Apple has addressed the issue their lawsuit is about, so obviously Apple is admitting guilt.
Right.
So this is really an interesting bit. The one thing that is interesting is the iPod does put out up to 115 decibels. And there are other countries, they were mentioning France specifically, it's illegal to sell a device that generates more than 100 decibels.
Wow.
So they've already put artificial limits, well, artificial, I guess. You know, it's whatever they want it to do.
Yeah, right.
They've already put limits in
there
other
is no
countries
natural
as well.
Limit in an iPod. It's all artificial
it's
when
all
you get
artificial,
right down
yeah.
to it.
So it's just don't turn it up so loud. And the big rock stars like Pete Townsend and John Entwistle, they've all said that, you know, after 30, 40 years of hard rock, you know, our ears were deaf.
Right.
And, you know, kids are saying, well, I'll be dead in 30 years. Ooh, I'll be old. I don't care.
I'll be old and I won't care. Right. Yeah. Right. All right. We've got how much time we got?
He doesn't know.
What color is the sky in your world? We got 2 minutes. We can take Bill from Rochester. Bill, what's your question? Bill, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I like your program. I listen regularly.
Thank you so
much. Thank
you.
Usually with a pencil and pad, too.
Sure.
Anyways, I have the Windows Home Edition Service Pack 2 that I've been trying to install on the computer for the past 8 to 10 months.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I install the Service Pack 2, mm-hmm. nothing works right. So I have to go back and...
Uninstall it?
Yeah, uninstall it and set the settings back the way things were before.
What type of computer do you have?
All right, I have a Gateway 512 RAM, 2 gig hard drive.
Okay, what you're going to have to do is first go to the Gateway website.
Okay.
And there's a number of drivers for both the motherboard, the video, and all the devices on that machine. And before going to the Service Pack 2, you're going to have to get all those updated drivers for that machine. Get them downloaded. Get them installed. Usually, Gateway, I know, was very good about having a step-by-step procedure of telling you what to download, what to install before you did the Service Pack 2 update, and then what to do after. Because there's certain things that you got to do before, certain things you got to do after the SP2, so it doesn't mess all your devices up.
And then you also have to do the same thing with all of your third-party devices, your printer,
your scanners,
your scanner. Anything like that.
Especially right. Scanners. Scanners are the notorious or the all-in-ones by HP. Say the all-in-one printers and all that. Quite often they get messed up on going to Service Pack 2.
Right, because since I've tried to install it, the Dazzle that I have for my media card.
Yeah. There you go.
That will not connect.
Yeah. Right, so you need to update the drivers of all of the devices in your system, both the ones from Dell and the ones you bought separately.
All right.
Gateway has a full page.
A Gateway.
Yeah, okay. A full-page procedure.
I'm trying
how
to find
do it.
Since Service Pack 2 came out so long ago, a lot of the companies have taken it off their main page, and you have to dig a little to find it.
Okay.
Most of the time, you can type in your service ID number from the back of the computer, and it takes you specifically to a page for all the drivers for that model computer.
Okay. So you appreciate right. it. Am I at risk without installing it?
No.
Well, yeah, all the fixes at Service Pack 2 fix.
But he can do the security ones one at a time.
Right, but you have to do something one way or the other. Listen, we have to take a break. We're going to get Rob Jason is in to give us the lowdown on the skinny, on the important stuff that's going on in the news. That's important news, weather. Weather is it's a beautiful thing out there. I'm actually seeing sunshine today. It's the big yellow thing in the sky. Apparently, that's something that happens in other
parts
of the
world. You are a complete disaster
regularly.
Area today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you
but
saying
right.
that to me.
Because we, yeah.
Because who cares? I'm the guy with the microphone. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob, oh my God, how do I get out of this, Linton, and me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. We've got a couple of you on the line, so stay tuned to Soundbites at 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180, the Choice 1 toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or *1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. It's 5 minutes after the hour, and for those of you who are just joining us, you've missed an entire hour of Soundbites. Why? Because it's daylight savings time, and you forgot to set your clock ahead.
What's the deal with next year? Now, I've heard...
Weren't you listening at the top of the show when we explained all of that?
Okay, if I was listening, I wouldn't be asking the question.
Apparently not.
I was busy taking phone calls, going to get you donuts and coffee and everything else you make me do.
I brought the donuts this morning.
Don't be telling people lies. You called me up this morning. You said, Rob, if you do not show up here with donuts, I will beat the ever-loving you-know-what out of you. That's what you told me. People don't know.
And did you know what?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for the donuts I bought. I mean, thank you so much.
We enjoyed them. Nick.
Steve brought circus peanuts.
Yep. Circus
Dave
peanuts.
Dave didn't bring a dang thing.
I brought myself.
Like I said.
I tell you what, I could have gone for some of those rum balls this morning.
Oh. Yeah, that's all you needed. The way you came in, your eyes were half masked just getting here. Needed rum balls.
Yeah, you had your rum
balls. Are you not the one who said to me, nothing a little booze can't take care of or something along those lines?
We're cleaning out.
All right, here we go. We're back to the show, and I want to talk a little bit about what goes on at our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week, we have a poll. Last week's poll, as you know, Vista has once again been delayed, this time till 2007. That would be next year.
Maybe.
So you got at least a year before Vista comes out. There are a lot of people, of course, who are saying that this is a boon for Macintoshes and Linux people.
Because really a lot of people porking off the
PC
makers.
A lot of people are saying, why wait a year for stuff we can already get in the Linux and Macintosh platforms? But at any rate, we had a poll. Last week's poll was about Vista's delay. 349 of you voted, making it number 78 in the all-time hit list. Thank you all very much. The question was Vista's delay, and the choices were devastates me, kind of disgruntles me, who cares, disappoints me, the Macintosh, and for the first time ever, the Linux.
Second time. We did it last week.
Oh, this is last week's poll.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
I wasn't listening.
Apparently not. All right, we have a rash of not listening today. The winner, of course, was 62%, a whopping 62% of you said, who cares? Followed by, believe it or not, the Linux with 52 votes, followed by disappoints me, followed by Macintosh with 25 votes, kind of disgruntles me, followed by devastates me. Five poor, sad souls devastated by the fact that Vista is delayed. Now, the interesting part, of course, is that the Macintosh typically gets 16 votes a week. That's the average number of votes per week for the Macintosh when the poll has nothing to do with the Macintosh.
Well, that's
when it does.
Steve making 16 service calls over 5 days.
And he's clicking each time. But this week, the Linux was a choice, which got 52 votes, and that apparently spurred the Macintosh community on to an all-time high of 25 votes for the Macintosh. This week's poll comes to us courtesy of Bob, one of our, I don't mention last names on the air, it's not Hawaii Bob, it's a different Bob. There was a survey out this week, Forrester Research had a survey that examined the trust that American households place in PC and consumer electronics brands, including Microsoft, Nintendo, and Sony. Sony gathered the highest marks of the three companies, earning an average grade of A+. Only Bose and Dell ranked higher than Sony overall. Microsoft, on the other hand, ranked 20th out of 22. 20 out of 22. That's 20 out of 22. Apparently, not a lot of people trust Microsoft. So that's this week's question. Do you indeed trust Microsoft? And the choices are yes, implicitly. No, but I like their software. No, but I'm trapped into using their software. The Macintosh and the Linux. So far, we've got, you know what, this new machine, there we go. So far, we've got 66 votes. I'm actually recharging that now. We'll see if I have a few more. There's 75 votes. The big one is, not surprisingly, 52% of you so far say no, but I'm trapped into using their software. No, but I like their software, followed by the Linux with 11 votes, the Macintosh only 9 votes, and 4 of you, and that's down 1 from last week, 4 of you, yes, implicitly trust Microsoft. So please vote in the poll. When you're done voting in the poll, take a look down underneath there. You'll see a little yellow box, and in that little yellow box, if you click on the Give Us Your Opinion, because we know that not you people can't just click on a button. You have things you need to say. So if you click on the Give Us Your Opinion link, it will take you to my website, AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com. Thank you. Pardon me. And you'll be able to put in your comment up to 256 characters. Keep it clean or I'll just delete it. And it just annoys you and me. So far, 11 of you have posted. Some very interesting posts so far. I have to say, very interesting posts so far. So definitely join us there. And once you're there, take a look around AskNick.com and see if you think it's worth $15 a year. That's certainly, I think it is. But then again, I'm the guy who gets the $15, so that's a whole different story entirely.
You or your wife?
I don't get the. I don't. Right? Hello. It's not. It has nothing to do with me. Nothing to do with me in the long run. But if you come, when you're done with that, please come back to our website, soundbites.org. Check out what's there. You'll find tips and tricks from Dave. You'll find all kinds of interesting stuff. You'll find links to some pretty cool things. And of course, most importantly of all, you'll find our forums where the niftiest people on earth hang out and where I recently got back in.
To see you back.
I was delighted to be. Well, I've been actually reading off and on. I just have not had the time.
Well, that's what I've been telling them.
I'm taking my master's degree, plus we're moving, our building is being renovated, and it's been a little nuts, but I'm hoping you get in at least once or twice a week. Maybe not answer everything, but keep my fingers in.
Yeah, it's got to be tricky going from teacher to student to teacher to student, class to class to
class. In the same day sometimes, yeah.
Am I teaching this class or am I taking this class?
There are times that I'll be sitting in a class and I'll just want to clarify a point and I have to stop and say, wait a minute, no, I'm the student and I'm pretty sure that somebody would not appreciate if I stood up and said something. So, yeah, it becomes an interesting problem.
Gray area.
The real problem I have is writing papers. I'm a writer. I can write all day long, but it's opinions. It's my opinions. And writing a research paper without my opinion in it is the toughest thing on earth for me. I can write 50 pages if you just want my opinion. But if you want other people, and I'll incorporate other people's opinions, mm-hmm. but it ends up being me.
Yep.
It's hard for me. It's hard for me. I have a tough life. Pity me. Pity me now. Okay, I feel better.
Do you grade yourself too?
If I could grade myself, yeah. I'm a tough grader.
I didn't do too good on this one. That's only a B.
A couple times I've been angry that I've gotten good marks. I didn't deserve them and I knew it. All right. Anyway, let's get back.
I can't even imagine having you in a class. In a class.
I'm like,
are you a good student?
As a student, yeah. I try to be. I try to shut the hell up and do my job.
But, I mean, how many times have you known more about what is going on than the teacher?
Not important. All right. I'm not teaching the class. I'm not teaching the class. And very rarely, RIT has some phenomenal teachers.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's not been a problem for me so far. What I really like is that they're generally a lot more organized. Can you tell that I'm not always as organized as I could be? They're a lot more organized than I am. I get real organized for my classes,
right.
But about the general knowledge in my head, being able to sit in the classroom and get it in an organized manner, whether I knew it or not, is what really counts for me because they lay it out better. I make connections that I hadn't made before. It's great. I love it. I love sitting in a classroom. I'm almost as much as I love teaching, and I love teaching. I have like a black belt. I'm up. I'm dancing around the classroom. I'm singing and juggling and doing stuff, and we chit-chat. I love teaching. At any rate, we should probably get back to the phones. Although it's never enough about me, we'll just say that it is enough about me now. We'll get back to the phones. Rick from Churchville has patiently been waiting on the line for me to stop spewing
ranting
forth, and so we'll talk to Rick from Churchville. Welcome, Rick. What's your question?
I got a question about Norton antivirus.
Yeah.
I recently had an email I opened by mistake. And the only thing that I can see that it has affected is my Norton antivirus.
Uh-huh.
There are some viruses that the first thing they do is disable your antivirus.
So that's where you have to download and run Stinger.
Yeah, have you danced the security tango?
I tried doing that last week, but I had problems with my sending stuff out because I switched over from one provider to another.
Yeah.
And I wasn't getting my stuff going out, and I kept going round and round and round. I even tried sending you guys an email, and it couldn't get to you.
Right. Well, that's a separate problem. Let's solve this one first.
Right.
What you want to do is follow the tango step by step, and that involves downloading everything, burning it to a CD or whatever, then rebooting in safe mode. Never skip any steps.
Can I do that now, though?
Yeah, absolutely. You should be able to download without sending things out. The tango has no sending out. It's all downloads.
Yeah.
Okay, so I can go ahead and start up the computer now that I know that there's a virus in it.
Mm-hmm.
And just follow everything step by step.
Yeah, don't do anything else. Don't start your email. Don't browse any websites. Don't play games. Just do this.
Now, one of the ways you can do that is instead of opening your browser, which then takes you to a homepage, and then typing in the LavaSoft to get Adware, go to start, run, and type the http://, and your address. That way it opens a browser window, takes you straight to that address, bypassing your homepage, and bypassing any homepage hijacks you may already have accidentally.
That's a very good tip.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great tip.
Yeah.
Okay.
I should write that down somewhere.
You should write that down somewhere. Dave can put it on the tips thing.
I'll go to your website and see if I can follow the tips.
Yes, securitytango.com is the website for the Security Tango. Duh.
But I can't go there right now because of the bug.
Well, no, you can go there. You can't give me a bug. My website runs on Linux anyway, so you can't give me a bug, so that's not a problem.
Going there.
Go there.
I'm going to Linux as soon as I can.
There you go. Now you're talking. I'm actually running Linux right here, right now. Mm-hmm. It seems to be doing very well. It's an old, junky laptop, but getting around the physical problems, it's doing the job. So definitely dance the tango. Now, as to your other problem, depending on what service provider you have, some of them do not allow you to send email out except through their server.
Most of them.
So you need to, what you'll need to do is change your outgoing service provider to their web server, and they can tell you which one that is.
That can get a little tricky, too. I've got Roadrunner at home and Frontier at work.
Right,
so when I take my laptop back and forth, I have to change my servers.
It's a pain in the neck. It really is. But that's, you know,
that's the way it works.
That's the way it works. And what are you going to do? But, so that's an interesting problem, but that's the way that works. So Rick, give that a try and let us know what happens. Good luck. It's always tough when you get a virus, to deal with that sort of thing.
Tracking it down. That's why sometimes we have to just pull the hard drive out of the machine and, clean it off, you know, off our test bench.
All right, our next,
get in there.
Yeah, exactly. Our next caller is Ron from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I've got a Quicken DOS 7.0. It's DOS, and I need to back it up. It'll back up on floppies, but I can't back it up on the CDRW. The only way I can do that, if it's backing up at all, is highlight the icon and just transfer files. Now, if any time I lose everything and I need to restore it, how do I? Would I be able to restore it just by taking it off the CD? Will that restore
everything?
Yeah,
you could just copy it off the CD onto a temporary folder on the new hard drive. Say the machine crashed and you had to put it back and, you know, you had the CD of the backed up files.
Yeah.
You could create a temporary folder, copy them back to a temporary folder on the hard drive, and then just point the programs, whether it's whatever, to that temporary folder and to say, okay, pull these folders, restore these folders back.
Import or restore, whatever it is.
But generally, it's very difficult to back up programs because of registry settings and things like that. All you can back up is your data.
Right. Yeah. And that's really what he's talking about here.
Yeah.
And you're still using the DOS-based version of Quicken.
Right. 7.0.
It might, Ron, it might be time to upgrade because one of the reasons they upgrade is because they fixed some problems in the older versions.
Okay, so if I upgrade it, will I be able to restore from the floppy onto the new Quicken?
What you'll do is just what Dave said. If you do an export of Quicken and then install the new version and do an import back into it, you should be fine.
Maybe, because he's going through such an old version. Well, he may not import everything.
Yeah, you might have to...
You might talk to the folks at Quicken.
Yeah.
Email them or give them a call. Check their website.
Might have to find some intermediate version to migrate through.
Right, right. But they can help you with that, and they may even have a tool to do it.
Yeah.
You know, they'll be happy to sell you a new version and help you upgrade these so you can use it.
Or they might be able to do the conversion for him if he's going
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Exactly. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Computer talk that you can understand. Now back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. It's 25 minutes after the hour. Look at it.
Boy,
look at
oh boy. They're going to start recruiting you to do news.
Yeah, that'll happen. All right. Well,
what's the temperature?
The temperature currently is 45 degrees.
Oh, my goodness.
It's 45 degrees. I have a little. It's clear skies in Rochester, New York. 45 degrees.
Expecting a high of 55 today.
Here's one for you. Visibility is 10 miles. Completely off topic. I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
Is it true that those weather bugs are just full of spyware?
Absolutely.
The one that's named weather bug specifically.
Okay, what can you get if you want to have that kind of stuff like you have? What's a program? What's a good program for that?
That isn't full of spyware.
That isn't full of spyware.
Well, I have to say this one. In terms of Windows, I don't know of one that isn't full of spyware.
Sorry to put you on the spot. I was just curious.
No, there's one. I think it's called Weather Channel.
Well, but it is. Is it part of the Weather Channel?
No, yeah. It's the same idea. No. It is. It's the same idea. It's got a lot of the same problems.
Plus, how a lot of the companies pay for the software is by including the spyware.
Mac has one, right?
It's built into System 10.4.
Oh. Right, and Linux has one. Well, there's a bunch of them under Linux. The one that I'm using just sits in my little taskbar at the top of the screen.
But I don't think people realize how full of garbage WeatherBug is.
They're horrible. It's horrible. It's got amazing amounts of spyware. In fact, there was a point at which I was all behind WeatherBug because it had this deal where if enough people joined and mentioned your school got weather equipment.
Oh.
They stopped that program a long time ago. So I was all about it until I discovered just how much junk comes down along with it.
It's really terrible.
But I'll actually look into it. We'll see what the story is. I have not found...
There is one from the Weather Channel.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I don't know if that one has it too. I mean, I haven't done any testing of it.
I'm pretty sure it doesn't. I won't swear to it. But,
yeah, until I've tested it, I don't know.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting thing. Apple Computer has joined BAPCO. Why is that important? BAPCO is a benchmarking consortium. And you might think to yourself, well, sure, every company likes to benchmark their stuff, and every company likes to be benchmarked. So why wouldn't Apple join BAPCO? BAPCO is a Windows benchmarking consortium. They're the people who put out the SysMark and MobileMark benchmark suites that are used all over the place. They also produce WebMark. Their members include AMD, Intel, Transmeta, ATI, people like that. Microsoft is a member, Dell, HP, Toshiba, you know, it's a who's who, heavy hitters of the industry. They're determining and developing the testing methodologies using programs like Office, Adobe Creative Suite, 3ds Max. The SysMark and MobileMark benchmarks are used by everybody, media, companies, corporations, government agencies worldwide. The significance of this is that Apple has now committed to Windows-based performance testing. I don't quite understand what
intriguing.
That means unless there is going to be a virtualization technology in the next version of OS X, where you'll be able to run virtual Windows machines or native support for Windows on the Mac. Other than those two choices, I don't know what would cause them to join this consortium.
No.
There has already been hackers on the internet that have figured out how to get Windows XP to boot on natively on an Intel-based Mac.
Right.
It was like a $14,000 challenge. People were donating money to get it. It's not easy, but they can do it, and there's a lot of drivers missing. There's no video driver,
right.
No audio driver. And Apple has said privately, and it's nothing in public statements, that they wouldn't do anything to stop people from running Windows on their Mac, but they would do everything in their legal power to stop people from running the Mac OS on a PC. So it's intriguing what this might mean if there's going to be everyone's waiting for the next version of Virtual PC from Microsoft, which right. allows you to run Windows programs on the Mac. It's not compatible with the Intel-based computer. Its whole purpose is to emulate an Intel chip.
Right, which now you don't have to.
Right, yeah. So the theory is you'll be able to dual boot or run Windows in a window on your Mac.
Right, that's the virtualization
That's
part.
The virtualization, yeah. So is Microsoft going to update that with Virtual PC, or is Apple going to include it with their Mac?
That's a lovely question.
And
it's
a very, very interesting theory.
Yes. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. We'll let you know. Our next caller is Jim from Greece, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hi, guys. My 78-year-old father gives me a call this morning in a panic because his PC was apparently taken over by viruses or spyware or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I get down here, and there's a program that I haven't heard of before. It's called Spyware Quake.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very malicious because you can go in and you can try to delete it through ad remove programs. You delete it there. I ran AdAware. I ran SpyBot Search and Destroy.
Mm-hmm.
And it reinstalls itself.
But you didn't run the entire Security Tango, did you?
Well, you know what? I have to admit I'm not a regular listener of the program.
Okay. Then let me tell you about this. It's the Security Tango at securitytango.com.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah,
now,
here's turn the, off the restore
here's the best
files.
Thing to do, though.
Okay.
If you've got a clean machine like, say, yours,
uh-huh.
download all the pieces, burn them to CD.
Okay.
Then that's one of the, you'll see that that's one of the steps in the Tango.
Okay.
Click on the Let's Dance button, print out that page, and follow each step down piece by piece.
Okay.
When it comes to the downloading part, if you can on your machine download, because you know your machine is clean, download pieces of the all the software and burn it to CD, and then when you go back to do it on your father's machine and it says download the software, just pull it off that CD.
Okay.
Then you know you've got a clean and uninfected copy. Make sure you're doing all this in safe mode, blah 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 blah, just like it says in never skip a step of the Tango. Not ever.
Okay.
And one of the things that you'll do is turn off System Restore. Now, people are always complaining, well, System Restore is how I go back to old versions of, you know, if there's been a problem. Well, generally speaking, that doesn't work well to begin with. And System Restore is where most of these things like Spyware Quake hide.
Okay.
Because the normal antivirus software can't get into there to do anything with
it. Because they're protected and hidden.
Right. You can only deal with it during a safe mode boot like you do in the Tango.
Okay.
So follow the Tango step by step. Don't skip any steps. Depending on how much stuff your dad has on his machine and how slow his system is, this can take hours. Make him buy you the beer. Then you, when it's clean, take our advice and tell and make him stop using Internet Explorer, stop using Outlook Express, run Firefox and Thunderbird, and he should be much, much cleaner.
Okay. And in terms of, is there an spyware program that will keep him from getting infected in the first place?
There are lots of them.
Including the AdAware and SpyBot that we recommend, but you have to pay for the versions. The free versions are after the fact.
I see.
They have pay versions that put the preventative measure in ahead of the fact.
But right. The thing of it is, though, is at the bottom of the Security Tango, there's a thing where he can email my wife, and she gives a step-by-step procedure on how to update those two programs, and they only take literally less than 2 minutes to update and run weekly.
Uh-huh.
It's no big deal that, you know, in between things while he's surfing or whatever, he could have that running in the background and checking his machine to make sure it stays right. clean weekly.
Right. Okay. The deal with the software that we recommend in the Security Tango is that it's all free. But you can buy versions of that software that give you extra features like auto updating, running in the background, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
So for him, it might be worth your time and effort to actually buy the software and install it so it's always running in the background for him.
Okay.
There's antivirus software. I personally run on my Windows box, I run AVG,
okay,
which is free and updates and does all the stuff you would want it to do. Again, you can buy a version that's a little better,
uh-huh.
and that is a perfectly good antivirus software program. But if you run the whole Tango down, buy all the software and install it, his system should be pretty clean.
Okay.
Yep.
Switch to Linux or Mac.
Put Linux on his machine, and he'll never have this problem.
Well, that's a good point, because he's sitting here right next to me. We got a gorgeous new state-of-the-art Macintosh. It's a dual-core 2.3 gigahertz with a 30-inch high-definition monitor.
Can I come to your house?
Sure.
And, you didn't get twin 30s? There you go.
Yeah. And should he use that more for, because he's got Safari on that machine. Is that going to be sort of like more immune to some of the spyware programs?
To many of them, not all of them. The halcyon days of no Mac viruses are gone.
Depends on how technical you want to get. There is no Mac spyware. There are no Mac viruses. There are four Trojan horses.
Right. But the point is the halcyon days are gone, and you can pick hairs all you want. The reality is, pick all the nits you want. The reality is it's the days are gone.
It's here.
So you want to run an antivirus program on that, and it certainly wouldn't hurt to install a firewall, but you don't have to be quite as fanatic about it under the Mac yet as you do under Windows.
There's a firewall built in, and you can use the Clam XAV free antivirus program on the Mac as well.
Right.
But in general, you are much safer on a Mac than you are under Windows with web surfing.
Right. So have him use that. Unless there's something he absolutely can't live without on the PC, and there are really very few programs you can't find at the very least equivalents to.
Can get around on it, okay.
Right.
Give it a shot.
Yeah, give it a shot. What the heck? Let's see what happens. All right. Our next caller is Rich from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Rich. What's your question?
Hi. Here's the thing. I got a Windows 98 machine that I'm upgrading by buying. I'm not upgrading. I bought a new machine. So I got a new Pentium 4 running Windows XP Media Center Edition. I wanted to copy over some files from the Windows 98 installation on that hard drive. So I put it in a USB box and connected it up, and the system recognizes it, but no drive letters assigned, and it won't allow me to read any files. So I put it in the machine with a ribbon cable in the Channel 1 IDE channel because the machine has the SATA drive.
Right.
And once again, it recognized that the drive was there in disk management, but the only option in disk management is delete the partition. It's like it won't read the FAT32 file system that's on there.
Do you have it set up as a
master
cable select?
No, I had it set up as a master.
No, try setting it up as cable select.
A lot of the newer computers want cable select.
Yeah, newer computers are all set for cable select.
Oh, so okay.
You're doing the right thing, Rich, taking the drive out of the old machine and hooking it into the new machine, but you have to connect it in the right way.
Yeah, put it in, move that jumper to cable select.
There's also the possibility that it's not running a standard driver. It's not standard FAT32. It might have been one of the third-party driver headers, to let the old computer recognize the drive bigger than 100.
Oh, my golly, I hate those. Yes.
With, what was it? Disk Mangler.
Yeah, Disk Manager, and then Seagate had another one. So there were utilities that hacked and patched the older computers to allow them to read bigger hard drives. Instead of updating your BIOS, you could patch the hard drive.
But see, if he's got everything else set, like his CD-ROM drive and everything else, if that's set to cable select and he's trying to put in a drive that's set to master or slave, that's going to mess everything up. Change the jumper on that hard drive to cable select and you should be able to see it.
Hey, good. Listen, I got one quickie.
Yeah.
Windows 98 machine, Lexmark printer. The printer's printing fine, and all of a sudden, one day, the printer starts to print, and it gets about 75%, and then just stops. Tried reinstalling printer drivers with the latest one. The machine operates normally. Other than that, one time, I switched the USB cable, got it to print completely, but then from then on, it just prints to about 54%, sometimes 70%, stops. The queue is hung. It won't allow me to. It says it's deleting the document from the queue, but it won't delete it.
All right, listen, Rich. Have you tried hooking this Lexmark to the new machine?
I hooked it up to an XP machine, and it seems to print fine.
Then the problem is somewhere in the drivers
for the old
machine. But since you're dumping the old machine anyway, it's not the printer. It's clearly the old machine. Listen, we got to take a
break. Maybe the new driver you're downloading is too new.
Right, right. It won't work under 98. A lot of them don't work under 98 anymore. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. He's just amused that I'm doing time checks.
I am very amused. You've got to do the temperature checks as well.
It's 46 degrees here in Rochester, New York. Happy now?
Yes.
And this is updating right from the airport. Updates every half hour.
Yeah,
our airport. Thank you.
That's one of the sneaky things. Depending on which setting it's using, is it the Rochester Airport? Is it the NOAA weather station?
Right. Yeah. Batavia? Because the NOAA website isn't necessarily Rochester Airport.
No, it
could
be Buffalo.
Right.
Actually, this has two. There's a Marine station. I can pick either the local Coast Guard station or the airport. From this piece of software running under Linux, just so you know. It lets
and
me.
And that does me a lot of good. How?
It does me a lot of good because I'm running Linux. I can look at the temperature. I can look at the forecast. I can click one button and see the radar map. Clear skies over Rochester, New York.
I think you're one of maybe five people that runs Linux, right?
No. Lots of people run Linux, and more will be running Linux. You know what's cool about Linux? You can get what are called live CDs. So, for example, you can go to the Ubuntu website at ubuntulinux.org or ubuntu.com and download their live CD and burn it. Boot the system with that CD in, and you're running Linux. It never touches your hard drive, so you don't have to, you know, make a choice. Do I delete my hard drive and run it? And you can run it. It runs slow because it's uncompressing everything from the CD whenever you run it, so loading programs is slow. But you can use it, play with it, get used to it. And I've told you before, the only difference between running any of these operating systems, it's like buying a new car. You still know how to drive, you just don't know where the radio is. It's just a matter of learning where the controls are. They do the same stuff.
Yeah.
They just do it in a slightly different way. Take a couple of days, and it's just like a new car. By the time the second week rolls around, by the time the new car smell is gone, you forget that you didn't know where the windshield wipers were and the radio was and all the little gizmos and gadgets. You know, the first week you buy a new car, you really want to drive on side streets because you're going to be swerving all over the road while you're trying to figure things out. By the second week, you're done. And it's the same thing with Linux. Maybe within a month, you've hit everything.
Right.
You know? So it's not hard. And you know, 8-year-old kids are doing it. 80-year-old men and women are doing it. It's not a hard thing to do. And it's free. You know why? I mean, it's hundreds of dollars. For Windows, it's hundreds of dollars more for Office. Why wouldn't I use the free stuff? If I got a choice between giving Bill Gates my money and keeping my money, I'll keep my money.
That's right.
That's how that works. And if you're going to spend your money, buy a new HD DVD player. Toshiba just launched the first one. Toshiba on Friday started rolling out their high-definition DVD players. They're in Japan just now. They cost just about $1,000. That's going to be the same price for the Blu-ray-based players that Sony introduced in July. But you know what? It's just like everything else. The first CD players were $1,000.
There's no HD content to buy yet either. Well, but that's coming.
Well, the nice thing about these, though, is if you plug them into your computer, you get like, what, 8 gig, 25 gig or some silly thing.
What was it? HD DVD was 25 gigs per side, and Blu-ray is 50 gigs per side, something
right,
like that.
Right. So, yeah, but they both use blue lasers, by the way. But anyway, they're out now, so...
And the blue laser was developed by the University of Rochester here in town.
Yes, it was. And I suspect that we'll be seeing them at human affordable prices in about a year or so. So, you know, keep yourself in line for those. They're coming up next. And, you know, when you install Linux, you've saved enough money to buy two. Our next caller is Eric from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Eric. What's your question?
Yes, I recently installed a second hard drive for backing up, and I'm using Acronis True Image 9.0. And I don't quite understand. Do I need to make a separate backup disk for a complete failure, or is the disk that came with the software?
There are a couple of things here. What operating system are you running?
XP.
Are you looking for if the hard drive dies, you could switch to the second one and it'll just boot up?
Right.
There's an easier way to do that than using Kronos, and I don't know that Kronos will actually
do it bootable.
I haven't studied it enough to know if it'll be bootable. But you can take your drives and mirror them.
Yeah, but XP Home doesn't let you do that.
Oh, you're using Home?
Yes.
XP Home doesn't let you do that.
Right.
Probably the best thing. Well, tell you what. If your hard drive crashes anyways, it's Microsoft's way of saying you needed to do some cleanup anyways. What I usually tell folks to do is just back up the documents and settings and any other folders that you might want to...
put data in.
Yeah, that you put data in. If you have to reinstall Windows, that's a good time to clean things out and start fresh anyways.
Well, you can always just try it now. Let Kronos run its full backup and then set your boot drive to the other drive and see if it works.
Right. It's an easy and cheap test. Because frankly, I haven't used that one that much. But give that a try. Going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
If you met C's to Max, these guys can answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Temperature.
Oh, excuse me, at 46 degrees. See, if we were a national show, you wouldn't read the temperature. You would just do the time check. Am I right? So I'm just dreaming. I'm pretending.
Maybe even on a national show, you wouldn't even do time.
Yeah, you would.
Not a chance.
Yeah, you would. You would say 50. You wouldn't say it's 12:53. You'd say 53 minutes after the hour, right?
No, you got me there.
I got you there.
And we could even tell them our temperature here, and they could be envious.
And it's 46 degrees in Rochester, New York. Clear skies.
Temperature in the studio was a balmy 25.
Well, remember,
I forgot to pay the heating bill.
Here in the studio, we've got the couches, the lounges, the hammocks, the pool, the jacuzzi. It's him in there who's sitting there with the coal-fired burner that he's got to stoke and the cold steel floor and all of that stuff. So we're really a lot better off than he is. And back to the phones, we're going to talk to John from Pittsburgh, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Peachy, great. How are you?
Good. Quick question for you. I'm archiving a huge library of VHS videotapes. And I've got two parameters I'm working off of. One, I've got to write them to DVD video. The other is I have to save that video file for use later to make more DVD videos and also to be able to download these video files from the web and view them on the web. That being the parameters, what would you folks recommend is the best file to save these as? I was thinking MPEG-2, because it's got to be universal. I got to be able to universally play this on any machine, Mac or PC as well.
Well, MPEG would probably be best for the web part.
You might want to look into the different QuickTime formats, because one of the big features in QuickTime 7 is scalability. So you can take a file and it will send it in 3G format to a cell phone, a web format or full format to a computer, all inside the file format itself.
Right. And the problem is that all of those are slightly more compressed than the raw video for DVD. And you want the best quality for the DVD. So if you've got the disk space, you really want to save two copies. One is the raw video that you burn to DVD, and the second is the converted and compressed version.
You're going to need 10 to 20 gigs of disk space for every hour.
Every DVD,
of,
right, every hour,
disk,
right.
Yeah.
Right. So you're really looking at, unless you don't mind losing resolution in the DVD, you're really looking at two different sets of storage requirements.
And if you're going to save a file so you can burn another DVD again, you're better off saving the DVD and making a copy. Then you don't have to have the storage space of that file if all you're ever going to do is make another copy.
Right. And then you're going to reburn the DVD. So as long as you have a, as long as you're willing to reburn the DVD every once in a while, you're probably better off rather than saving that separate video, because it's as clean as it's going to get on the DVD itself. That's absolutely
Plus,
right.
Since it's coming from VHS, it's going to be a pretty low quality anyway.
Well, there's that. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, our next caller, Dorothy, from Honey Eye Falls, New York. Welcome, Dorothy. What's your question?
I have a Pogo.com games installed on my computer, and I've been playing them right along.
Yeah.
But we had to renew our spyware, and after we installed the Norton spyware, I can't get the applets of the game. I can get into my Pogo site, but when I try and open up a game, it'll say applet started, and then I get a sign that says Java not found or not working.
Are you using Norton 2006?
Yeah.
How did I know?
Norton has had a few problems.
Our son, who's a computer programmer, can't figure this out.
Yeah.
What you tell him is this. Norton has disabled the Java runtime environment.
Okay.
And if he uninstalls Norton...
Java run... What did you say?
Java runtime environment.
The
JRE.
Yeah.
And if you uninstall Norton and maybe replace it with AVG, which is free and wonderful...
Replace it with AVG.
Right. And if you need a firewall, then you use Zone Alarm. You can get both of those... There are links to both of those at securitytango.com.
Is there anything wrong with running the Windows firewall?
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Yeah, it's not really good.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, it's not as good as... securitytango.com to download that stuff. Okay. The Norton has had some problems, and until they clean them, we cannot really recommend Norton antivirus and Norton any Norton product.
I think a little more
point.
Than some.
Well, yeah. I'm being polite here. I'm trying to be nice about it, but the reality is that Norton is really not where you want to be at the moment.
Well, we were running McAfee before and had no problems.
Exactly.
And I'm... recovering from surgery, so I need my game site right now.
You need your game site, and your son, when he comes over, since he's a computer guru, just tell him those things and he can fix it for you. All right, we're apparently we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. As always, call early, call often next week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I really want to thank Rob Linton, who's kept us on the straight and narrow and been amused every time I gave the time check at 59 minutes after the hour. 46 degrees in Rochester, New York. Sunny, balmy, 46 degrees. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with more news and more weather and more shows here on 1180 WHAM. We'll be back here next week. In the meantime, go to the website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And we'll be back next week on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites, on 1180 WHAM. Thanks for listening. 50.